Hi, this is Tracy Hales-Vass with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico. Today I'm talking with Bryn Kalinda about the Callahan family saga and the latest in that saga, the Irish Skateboard Club. Good morning, Bryn.
Good morning, Tracy. How are you?
I'm great. I'm really glad to talk to you and glad to see another Callahan family story.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Excited about this one.
Yeah, I can see why. But before we go further, we're talking about the Irish Skateboard Club, number four in the Callahan family saga. Well, first tell us about the Callahan family saga and then about the Skateboard Club.
The saga is four books so far.
Uh-huh.
And it's about, I started the idea of writing about military, well, families under stress, and specifically military families under stress, because that I think military families are under more stress than most, because
mm-hmm.
You know, all the moves and the deployment, especially these days. I did not start out to write a series. It just evolved that way because I got good results and people enjoyed it and I enjoyed it. But because of the military part, you know, often the families are split up, especially these days with deployments.
Mm-hmm.
So the people had to do different reactions. They had to grow. They had to pick up the slack in their family when they're a one-parent family, and particularly the spouses, of course, and most of them still to this day are females. So I had to emphasize the strength and the character of the females,
mm-hmm.
and that goes through all my books. I've got very strong female characters.
Yes,
and people ask me why are these females so competent and so great? I say, well, that's in my life. I'm surrounded by strong women. My wife, my sisters, and my friends. They're all competent, super competent, actually, and very smart. And I have one friend who said, well, I don't know anybody like this. And I said, well, then, buddy, you need to get out and meet more women.
Right.
There's a lot of really strong women out there. So that's sort of one of the parts of my books that I like the most. In fact, Homeland Burning,
mm-hmm.
I used most of my books have aviation involved in them because I'm an Air Force pilot. I was an Air Force pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And in this one, I made the pilots women. And in fact, they were so well done, according to the International Women Pilots Association, also called the 99s, which was founded by Amelia Earhart and 98 of her best friends.
Yeah.
They being a friend of the 99s, they couldn't make me a member or honorary member because I'm of the wrong gender. So I'm a friend. They even gave me a hat, and I'm invited to their conventions to talk about my books and stuff. So I got a real kick out of that.
Yeah. And Homeland Burning just won a great award.
Well, yes, ma'am, that's exactly right. I'm so pleased. It's the New Mexico Arizona Book Awards. It's the highest award I've ever won. And it's for books of the Southwest or written by Southwest authors or take place in the Southwest. And I checked all those boxes. So, and the book takes place mostly in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about international environmental terrorists launching attacks on the United States, especially in New Mexico, and where they're trying to burn down the national forest and attack our water supplies, our watersheds, and blow up dams. And the New Mexico National Guard, along with the Callahans, come through. That's the whole story. Because
right.
the Callahan family, although they're Irish Americans and they've moved all over the place as being in the military, they settled down in Taos. So most of the books have some connection, direct or indirect, with Taos. And in fact, the Homeland Burning, it's all about New Mexico. And this one starts off, the Irish Skateboard Club starts off in Taos, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it starts off in Albuquerque and goes to Taos.
And this is number four. And we met the protagonist of this one, Michael, in Kida's Quest.
Well, we actually, he's been in all of my books.
Is he? Okay.
He's a baby in Cochabamba Conspiracy and Homeland Burning, but in Cheetah Quest, you're right. He's a four-year-old, and he's quite an active four-year-old, and he plays a big part in the book. He actually saves his mother's life. So he starts off being a hero pretty early in his life.
He's a pretty remarkable teenager now in the Irish Skateboard Club.
Well, he comes from a pretty extraordinary family, but actually, I tried to make them as just regular, competent, smart people. Mm-hmm. And they keep running into extraordinary circumstances, so they have to grow, because that's what happens in thrillers. Thrillers, you start out as an ordinary person, and you grow to meet these extraordinary circumstances. Basically, you have to accomplish heroic deeds to become a hero. And that's the whole idea of a thriller.
But you take Michael across the ocean.
He is a native South American, mm-hmm. born in Bolivia, adopted right after birth by an Irish-American family and raised in Taos, New Mexico. So he's a little bit out of sorts. Most normal teenagers have some problems with adjusting, trying to find out who they are, that coming-of-age stuff that you go through, about all the horrors of high school. But his are complicated by the fact that he is adopted, and his family that he's adopted from are all big and blonde and very competent. But he picks up a lot of talents from them because he's raised on a ranch outside of Taos. I have a great deal of respect for people who live on ranches, because it seems to me that they can do almost anything, whether it's changing a tire or rewiring a house or rustling calves or all those things that you have to do on a ranch, because it's just, you have to. I mean, you're out in the middle of nowhere, and if something breaks, you got to fix it. So he grew up that way, riding horses. His best friend is from the Taos Pueblo, and he and his family break horses for a living, mm-hmm. on their ranch. So, and Michael goes off on the drives up and taking the cattle up into the national forest. And so you have to get really independent and very competent to do those things. He also has another situation where his grandmother is a white Russian descendant raised in Italy. So she speaks Italian to the kid. His grandfather lived in Russia for 30 years, so he speaks Russian to the kids. And then his parents speak Spanish, so they speak all those languages in the household, which is a little bit different for America. In Europe, it's pretty common to have three mm-hmm. or four languages, even with little kids or young people.
Yeah, and he's, I don't want to give too much away, but his ability to understand those other languages breaks the plot there, doesn't it?
Well, that's right, and that's the key to it. He's the only guy must be the only guy in Ireland that could have done this or could have deciphered what was going on, because the bad guys are speaking back and forth in Italian and Russian, and he can understand both of them. So he basically stumbles onto a conversation that he shouldn't have stumbled onto, and most people wouldn't have understood what was going on.
Right, and the people who are speaking had no idea they were being understood.
That's right.
It's great. I love the characters. I really liked Michael. And, of course, we have Kira, who is very important in this plot.
Yeah, I just describe her as feisty, fascinating, and lovely. And she is, to me, is a typical, or maybe a stereotypical, Irish girl, mm-hmm. a young lady. And she's pretty feisty, and she says exactly what she thinks. And she comes from a background, socioeconomic background, that's distressing. Her father died early, and mother has to work two or three jobs to keep the family fed. And Kira knows that her only chance to change their whole family's lives is to, she won this scholarship to this really fancy pants high school, mm-hmm. in Ireland, with St. George's College. And it was founded in 1679, and it's had all sorts of distinguished graduates, and it looks like Princeton. If you see pictures of it, it just looks like Princeton. And there's lots of these really fancy private schools in the UK and Ireland. So she doesn't want to have a boyfriend. She doesn't want to do anything except she studies hard and she has a job as a waitress in a pub. And her mother works two jobs. So it's a tough life for her. And that's one of the problems Michael has, is that he's trying to get her attention and she's too busy. Sorry, her ambition is to go to Trinity College Dublin, which is right. Their Harvard. It's the best school in Ireland. In fact, it's one of the seven ancient universities of the English-speaking language. And it was founded in 1592 by Queen Elizabeth I. She was the patron of it. It's the first Protestant university of all the universities in UK time. It just happened after Henry VIII, you know, and up until then everything was Catholic. It's a very big deal. That's where she wants to go to school.
And she's setting her sights on that, but she needs a little bit of help with her Spanish.
Right. Now, isn't that nice? Again, she's poor, comes from a poor family, and she's also on a small island. And again, she's got big ambitions. Her big ambition is after graduating from high school, she's going to take a year off and do a year abroad in Spain.
Right.
And she's had 7 years of Latin, so she has a good background for languages, and so she's blasting through with Spanish, but she's skipped Spanish 2 and go right into Spanish 3, and she's having problems.
Yep.
Fortunately for her, Michael shows up, and he's fluent in Spanish, so he offers to help her with the Spanish, which is part of the way he's trying to worm his way into her heart. Clever lad that he is.
Yeah, and he makes other friends through the skateboarding he is so expert at.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up. That's where the title of the book comes from. That was my wife's idea. Because I really like young people.
Mm-hmm.
We had three boys, Rock'em Sock'em boys. All of them were snowboard competitors or skier competitors. We spent a lot of time out on the ski mountains in Taos and Angel Fire and all over New Mexico, and in fact, all over the United States, because the boys were competitors. I was the New Mexico series director for the United States of America Snowboard Association, or USASA.
Wow.
So I had to schedule and direct and even judge all the competitions in the state of New Mexico. So our people would qualify to go to nationals. In fact, at our little high school there in Angel Fire, we had, one year we had 65 kids and 12 of them qualified to go to the national championships.
Oh,
so,
my gosh.
Yes, it was a very high percentage. And so I just sort of fell in love with these kids because they're all rock'em sock'em kids and they're so much fun and they're so innocent and they're so active and excited about life. And so I wanted to write a book for them. And skateboarders actually invented snowboarding, although snowboarders would probably argue with that. But there's a lot of interplay between the mindsets of the kids are the same, skaters and shredders. They think alike. In fact, they use a lot of the same jargon. A lot of the jargon we used in the snowboard competitions, you know, ruggies and some of the other words that we would use, the names of the actions that they do, the maneuvers that they would do, they would have the same names in snowboard as they did in skating. So I thought, well, heck, Michael, it's logical. This kid lives in Taos, which is one of the best ski areas in the world. So he's a snowboarder. He's a rock and sock and snowboarder.
Mm-hmm.
So he's also a skater. He feels like he's, when he goes over to Ireland, he's been doing this for more than they have. So he's much better than they are. And he makes an immediate impression on these kids. So he has a nice cocoon of friends that were skateboarding, who are skateboarders. And he's one of the instructors there. So
right.
I can get them. So it broke a lot of the ice and it helped with the language as well. You know, I went over to England and flew with the Royal Air Force, and I had a heck of a time with the Queen's English. So I can easily imagine Michael would have the same kind of problem with the Irish.
But you know and wrote the skateboarding language pretty clearly and described some of the stunts and tricks that they were doing. So I see how a young adult reader could enjoy this book, too.
Yes, I wrote it for them. One of the things that started it off, Tracy, is that I would go to writers' conventions, like up to Pikes Peak or up in uh, or Southwest riders down in Albuquerque, Pike Peaks riders, or the Rocky Mountain Fiction Writers Association up there in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And my friends, the young adult writers of young adult books,
right,
were almost always female. And I started talking to them about writing a book about boys, a thriller for boys, and they said, oh, gosh, please do. According to them, it was unanimous, by the way, that they all said, girls read more than boys, and girls and boys don't read very much anymore. And they said what they needed was some books with boy trans stars, you know, the major protagonist would be a boy and getting in trouble and getting out of trouble. They said the girls would read the boys' books, but the boys wouldn't read the girls' books.
Uh-huh.
So they said, please do this. And so I decided I would, and I went ahead and wrote this book for teenage boys. But I also wanted to make it so it was a crossover so that adults would read it. And the reason I did that is because, first of all, the kids, Michael and Kira, had to have a major obstacle in their lives. And so mm-hmm. I decided at the time, 2 years ago, human trafficking was just starting to become something that you read about in the news. Very common now, but it wasn't back then. So I thought, heck, I'll run into a human trafficking ring. So that's their major obstacle. But human trafficking is a really difficult subject to talk about. It's sort of one of those icky, like facts of life.
Mm-hmm.
And parents are sort of reluctant to talk about that with the kids, and the kids really don't want to talk about it with their parents.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that I would write this book as sort of an introduction to human trafficking. I don't get really gross. I don't get into the really nasty, horrible things that go on. I allude to them, but I leave it to the reader's imaginations. And the idea is that the kids would read these books and they would learn something about human trafficking, because guess what? Kids are the target. 71% of the people who are trafficked are either female or young people. So, that's just a terrible number. I mean, there's more slaves today in the world than there have ever been. And too many of them are sex trafficked. And I mean, we talk human trafficking, but what we're really talking about is sex trafficking. Horrific things happen. So at any rate, so the kids need to have their attention raised, or their antennas tuned in to this. And the parents, this is an opportunity for parents to talk to their kids about something that's really important for them to know. And so the parents can read the book and they can learn some good things and actually broach the subjects to the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Or the kids could do it the other way around. Hey, Mom, tell me about this. I don't know anything, but I've never heard about this except here. And I see it on television. Would you explain this to me?
Right.
What does this mean to me? And so what we want to do is start generating some intergenerational conversations. So what I did is at the end of the book, I put a lot of good information in the back of the book of organizations that people could talk to and contact. They have speakers that come out to schools or churches or, you know, scout groups or whatever. And so I put in 2 pages of discussion questions that
right,
anybody could use, going either direction, from a kid's perspective to the adults or the adults down to the... And as you know already, I know that in most young adult books are actually bought by people older than 20. And so it's like 70% of the books that are allegedly young adult are bought by people in their 50s, 40s, and 50s, and even up to 70.
Really?
Yeah, it was amazing to me to see that statistic. In fact, I just got a review of the Irish Skateboard Club on Amazon by some guy who says, this is a good book for septuagenarians. And he is one. He's in his 70s. And he said, this is a great book. Yeah. And people are buying it for their kids. I would like to see pastors buying it for their youth groups and scout troops buying it for their kids and kinds of bulk sales. And of course, you and I are sort of prejudiced. So, you know, we're biased towards,
right,
towards reading and writing and stuff. So.
Would you like to read something, speaking of reading, from this book?
Well, I would like to read. I've got a couple things that I could read, short, 3 or 4 pages at a time, of the book, And here's one thing on chapter three. Michael has to fly to Ireland, so he flies first class because his family's pretty upscale, mm-hmm. and he's going through Chicago Airport, O'Hare Airport. So here he is, chapter three, American Airlines flight 3513, O'Hare International Airport, Chicago. Michael peered out the window as his aircraft taxied through the rain lashing the tarmac. Still emotionally wired from the pre-departure of Dimon, he had passed a bumpy flight watching movies on his iPad. The aircraft was almost 10 minutes early into Chicago to make his next move a bit easier. He was forced to shuffle through the tight-packed crowds bustling along the corridors, inevitably clustered at random in the most inconvenient places until he found the elevated monorail and zipped over to Terminal 2. Michael found his grandfather's stated place in O'Hare, a wide spot in the corridor dominated by a shiny World War II U.S. Navy fighter. He turned his phone back on as he passed the display, backed up to the airplane, and took a selfie. Too close. He approached a gray-haired older man wearing a suit with a badge that proclaimed him as Timothy Simmons, DDS, docent. "Sir, could you please take my picture next to the airplane?" With a smile, Simmons took his phone and motioned Michael over. Your back coat was standing next to the windows. He lined up the shot, then handed the phone back. "There you go. Thank you, sir. I'm going to text this to my grandfather. I'm here to answer any questions tourists have about the display," Simmons said. "Do you know anything about the airplane?" Michael nodded. "It's an F-4F Grumman Wildcat. It's painted just like the one Butch O'Hare piloted on the day he saved the USS Lexington from attack by 9 Japanese Mitsubishi bombers. He was awarded the Medal of Honor." Simmons smiled again. "Pretty impressive, young man. Most passengers who come through here have no idea who the airport was named after or what he did. Butch O'Hare is one of my grandfather's personal heroes. He asked me to pay on his respects." "Really?" "My grandfather's my own personal hero. He was a fighter pilot. So was his father and my father. Great-granddad actually met Commander O'Hare in the Pacific during the war." The docent looked impressed. "Not many young people know much about World War II, young man. Well, every kid in Taos knows, thanks to my grandfather. He's a retired major general. Every Veterans Day, he wears his uniform to the high school and talks about American history. He's pretty classy. He's like a grandpa to the whole town. And lots of the kids come from the Pueblo, so we know about the Navajo code talkers who come mostly from Arizona and New Mexico. Sounds like Taos is a good place to grow up." "It is." Michael felt the first pangs of what could only be homesickness well into his gut. He fought them down. As he rode the monorail back to the international terminal, he used his phone to check the weather. And the area surrounding the counter at his gate was jammed, and the standby board listed nearly a dozen names. A freckle-faced boy with longish hair about his own age set off to one side in a wheelchair, arm in a sling and leg in a cast. He was dressed what looks like Michael, baggy shorts, a mountain bike jersey, and a cap worn backwards. He had an anxious look on his face. Michael slid over and said, "Dude, what happened? Wait, don't tell me. Skateboard or mountain bike?" The kid looked up and said with a smile, "Mountain bike. I trashed myself big time." "Been there, buddy. Over the handlebars?" "Yep." Michael chuckled. "Been there, too. Physics strikes again. I broke my wrist and my arm snowboarding. Last May, I broke my leg." They shook hands. "I'm Michael. I'm Max Ewan. I've been with my grandparents in California. Missed my scheduled flights because of the accident. Got to meet my parents in Rome tomorrow." "You live there?" Max nodded. "My parents work in the U.S. Embassy," Michael said in Italian. "Yeah? How are you enjoying Italy?" "Love it," replied Max, also in Italian. "I've been in the international school in Rome for 2 years now. It's great." "My grandmother grew up in Siena," Michael said. "I've been there a lot. We speak Italian in our house back in New Mexico." There was another incoherent announcement over the airport loudspeaker about their flight. Max made a fist with his good hand and banged the wheelchair armrest. "I've just got to get on this flight. Chicago to Dublin, Dublin to Vienna, Vienna to Rome. But I got to get to Dublin first. This is my only chance to connect today. Long way to go to get home, dude." "True, true, 30 hours start to finish." The gate attendant hurried through the crowd to hand Max a boarding pass. "You can board now. We found you a seat near the rear." "Sorry, but that's the best we can do. The plane is completely full." Michael looked down at Max and tried to imagine how awful the flight would feel, stuffed in a rear seat, people bumping into his leg on their way to the toilet. Brutal. He showed his ticket packet to the attendant. Give him my first class seat, please. I'll light it back. Startled, the attendant checked his boarding pass. Are you sure? Once you get seated, there's no switching back. I've ridden on a plane wearing a cast. It totally sucks, even in first class. I'm small. I can fit in anywhere. So I put that in the book to give people an idea of what kind of kid Michael is.
Right.
He knows he's small, and in this case, it works for him because he goes in the back. It's not so bad, but he helped out a kid that was really in distress.
He was empathetic there.
Yes. He's got a good heart.
And, you know, how many kids would do that?
None of my kids.
Right. And Michael stays in touch with Max through the novel.
Well, that's right. And, you know, that's a little bit of foreshadowing because Max comes up big time in the book.
What's coming up next in the Callahan family saga?
Well, that's a very good question. What I decided to do is I'm going to outline two different books. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the month, when I look at which one is the better outline.
So we'll be looking forward to what happens next.
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to finding out what happens
right,
next.
Right.
Because every time I write a book, I'm one of these plotters as opposed to a pantser. I work things out in advance. Mm-hmm. At least I do. I try to convince myself that's what I do, but I really don't. Because what happens is every one of my four books that I've written has a different ending than the one I started with. So the characters seem to take over.
Right.
And, you know, I'm a pretty traditional kind of guy, and it's really straightforward. And when I started writing there in Taos, going to a writer's group in Taos, some of the other writers would talk about, you know, how the character is taking over and how the character is talking to me, and, you know, the universe is humming and this, that, and the other. And I would go, oh, geez, this is Taos, you know. And yet, it happens. That's amazing. In Cheetah Quest, for example, I had this plot I laid out, and I had this lady character that I invented in Chapter 3, and she was going to do something brilliant in Chapter 5, and then I was going to have her killed off in Chapter 8 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time I got to Chapter 8, I had fallen in love with her, and I decided I couldn't kill her. So I had to go back to Chapter 3 and rewrite some of her backstory. And so I brought it through, and sure enough, in Chapter 8, she didn't die. In fact, she took over the book, and she married one of the other characters, and she saved people's lives, and she ended up completely changing the book all by herself. I finished writing the first draft, and Kira started haunting me.
Ah.
And kept saying, that's not what I would have done, would I now? You know, in her Irish lilt. Mm-hmm. And so to go back and look at all the places where I had her doing things that she wouldn't normally do, and she would just nudge me along. She would haunt me. I mean, I would be out walking my 3 miles a day, and she'd start pounding me, get back there and fix that. And I went back, and so ended up she became much more of a hero than I had originally thought she was going to be, and so basically. This is a dual hero book because she saves the day, he saves the day, everybody saves, everybody gets saved between those two kids.
Right.
They just do one monumental thing. So,
yeah, she is a strong character. I like her so much.
Well, would you like to see her again?
I would love to see her again.
Well, yeah, that's one of the things. I get a lot of that from especially from women. They say, oh, man, she's great. In fact, I have a friend who just finished writing her first book, and her name is Kira. So she thinks this is dynamite. She wants this kid to come back. Lynn and I are going to go spend a few months down in Panama. So we should have the Panama Skateboard Club and have Kira and Michael meet up in Panama. For her to go through a Spanish school and they run into some trouble down there. So
I like it.
That's one of the two that I'm going to...
Well, you might end up with two more books from this one.
Well, that's... I've got three or four floating around in my head, and I've actually sketched out a couple more. It's just...
That's great.
Right now, so that's what I have to do.
Good deal. And that was Bryn Calenda talking about the Callahan Family Saga, and especially his latest book, The Irish Skateboard Club. This is Tracy Hales-Vass with Bright on Four Corners on KSJE, the cultural beacon of the Four Corners.